Well, hey there. Welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Dr. Chris Friesen is going to be our guest today, and we'll be right back with Chris after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, send me some mail, mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Hey everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Dr. Christopher Friesen. He's got a book called Find Out Who You Are, What You Really Want, and How to Make It Happen. Hey, Dr. Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We have a little tradition here on The Journey of Hope where we start off by asking the guests to tell us a little bit about themselves. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a psychologist by training. I have a background in neuropsychology, which has to do with the brain. I also have a background in forensic and correctional psychology as well. Most of my time these days is spent working with what I define as high achievers. These could be, you know, athletes like Olympic athletes, professional athletes, or up-and-coming athletes, or other people who have big goals. So they could be entrepreneurs, they could be people starting new businesses, they could be writers. It doesn't really matter. So I do a lot of work locally, and I do work on the phone with people. And like you said in the introduction, my new book, the main title is called Achieve, and the subtitle is, just like you said, Find Out Who You Are, What You Really Want, and How to Make It Happen. Yeah, and I could tell you a lot more, but I'll let you ask the questions.
Okay. Well, I noticed one of the things that you mentioned is that you have some involvement working with offenders, and you told me prior to going on the air that you had just been to the police department. Do you mind me asking what the extent of your work is there?
Yeah, so the police department, as of today, for example, I do the pre-employment screening of the local police department new recruits. So they have to pass a medical exam and a psychological exam, and that's on the psychological side of things. My corrections and forensic work, when I was in resident or intern back in the mid-2000s, I 2006, I think it was, 2005, I worked at a psychiatric hospital that also had a forensic psychiatric unit. So I saw people through there. I did a lot of therapy and assessments of offenders, a lot of sex offender work. I also worked at a treatment correctional facility here in Ontario, Canada, where I'm located, and I did a mixture of assessments and a one-on-one treatment and therapy with the offenders that were there.
Okay. I also noticed that one of your areas of expertise is to work with elite athletes, and one of the reasons, when I read a little bit about your bio, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is I was curious as to the following, and is getting an elite athlete to optimize their performance, is that different than, say, getting an ex-offender to not be discouraged about the job hunt difficulties? Do those sorts of motivation come from the same place?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of overlap between the two. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. When I worked with offenders, that was one of these. Well, I always knew I wanted to work with these sort of elite athletes, and I've worked with them before. But working with the offenders actually really encouraged me to work with these high achievers. And the reason I say this is when I was working at the treatment correctional facility, the individuals who were at that, it's a medium security prison. The people that were there were, they had to apply to get there. So this is, you had to be pretty serious about rehabilitating yourself. And the powers that be had to be confident that there was some possibility of rehabilitation. And so when I was working there with, it was all male facility, I had a lot of fun, and the guys that I was working with were, a lot of them are really, not all of them, but most of them are pretty motivated. And that really just sparked my interest in this area. And so, re-sparked my interest, I guess is a better way of saying it. But, when it comes to achievement, whether it's a big goal like, making the Olympic team or presenting on Shark Tank, your entrepreneurial idea, or if your goal is to, not, like you're saying, not get discouraged and get a job that's that you like. I really think that the motivation that you, or the place you have to go to get there, is the same. And in my book, I talk a lot about this. So in my book, I sort of outline a series of steps. It's geared towards these high achievers, but really it's same for everybody. And so the first thing you want to know is your personality. And I can talk for a whole hour on that, so I'll just give you the quick version. We all differ in a way in terms of our personality. These are both our strengths and our weaknesses. And you really have to know yourself really well before you can really set the goals and achieve the goals you want to achieve. From there, the next step is to really get in touch with your values or what's really important to you. Because as you said, you're going to potentially face a lot of discouraging situations if you're having trouble finding a new job and reintegrating, into the workforce. And your motivation is going to be tested. But if you're really in touch with who you are and what your values are, and from there, knowing your strengths, your talents, your interests, what turns you on and turns you off, then you can really get into more of a mission or a purpose. In terms of digging, and once you get that, whether you're an elite athlete or it doesn't matter who you are, you need that to be able to face the inevitable setbacks you're going to experience. Because everyone fails, even though when we watch these superstar athletes and other super successful people, they've all failed many times, and we all fail repeatedly throughout life, and that's the way the world works. And it's really about what you do with that failure. And if you know all these things about yourself, you know who you are, you know what's important to you, you've gotten a better sense of your passions, your interests, and therefore your mission in life, or missions, you can have more than one in life, you're going to have this ability to deal with setbacks as learning experiences and not be as discouraged. You're going to have this motivation, this energy that's going to drive you regardless. So I think that's really important. It doesn't matter where you're coming from.
Okay. Let's take one specifically, like finding your strengths. Can you share with us a little bit about how somebody would go about doing that?
Yeah, so... There's a number of ways, and in my book I describe this in different ways. So your personality is, for example, your personality traits can be your strengths and your weaknesses. And I'll sort of summarize the five basic personality traits that personality psychologists have repeatedly found for about 60, 70 years now in research that across cultures we all tend to fall somewhere along a continuum with these five global traits.
Okay.
The first one I call susceptibility to negative emotions and stress. So we all differ in terms of how easily we get rattled, how easily we feel anxious, angry, even impulsive. And there's actually research to suggest that when we can't stop ourselves from doing things we know we shouldn't do, whether it's overeating, whatever it is, that's often related to a difficulty controlling your negative emotions, because it's really... when you have to resist, stop yourself from doing something you know you shouldn't be doing, there's a negative emotion associated with that you have to tolerate and resist.
Do you talk about some? Do you talk about some techniques to use to stop those kinds of negative emotions causing an impulsive reaction that's not healthy?
Yeah, I mean, one thing for this first global trait, negative, I call it negative emotions. So for that trait, this gets. When I worked in the correctional system, mm-hmm. A lot of the guys I saw, this was one of their biggest issues is the negative emotions. They weren't very good at regulating their negative emotions. And some simple ways that are not necessarily used in the moment, but that you can train yourself on a day-to-day basis to make yourself and your physiology and your brain more resistant or less likely to have stronger negative emotions. And so one thing you can do, it's called RSA breathing, and just it's really fancy. I'll explain it in real simple terms. All you got to do is you breathe in through your nose for approximately 5 seconds. So you take a long and slow breath. Then you breathe out through your mouth for, again, 5 seconds, a long and slow breath. So you're breathing the entire time. So you're not taking the deepest breaths ever. You're taking these long and slow breaths, and you do this for at least about 3 to 5 minutes. And what this gets really physiological, but essentially there is something called the vagus nerve. That's a giant nerve that goes from your brain to most of your organs, and it's related and controls the stress response in your body. And when you breathe this way, it increases vagal tone. And you can think of like muscles, right? You work out, mm-hmm. you get more tone in your mm-hmm. muscles. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not a muscle, but it's the same idea. It gets stronger, this vagus nerve. And what it does is helps your body relax or come down easier. So if you have strong vagal tone by doing this breathing exercise, you actually are much less likely to be to get strong negative emotions.
And those negative emotions are what, if I understand you correctly, are lead to behaviors, like impulsive behaviors that cause people to be incarcerated. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, that's one side of the coin. And actually, let's talk more about this, because there's another personality trait of the five. Okay. I guess the last one. Personality researchers call it conscientiousness. I don't like that term. I call it motivation and self-control. So whereas the personality trait of negative emotions stems from the emotional part of your brain, it's an emotional issue, the motivation and self-control is a motivation issue. And they're actually related, but for the most part, unrelated. So just to give you an example, when I said that people who are high in negative emotions tend to have a hard time resisting, stopping themselves from doing things they know they shouldn't be doing, like overeating, overdrinking, taking drugs, taking that money that's on the table when the cashier left. I'm just making this up,
right.
to resist that. You have to be in control of the negative emotions, because you have to control that. The other side of the coin is the motivation part of your personality, and that is a little bit different. That is the ability to get yourself to do things that you know you should do, but you don't really feel like it in the moment. And those are both related to making impulsive decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. What would be an example of that? Like, say, exercise or?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Getting yourself to get up in the morning and exercise. Getting yourself to get up and go to work. Everyone struggles with that. I struggle. I love my job, and my alarm goes off at 6:30 in the morning. It takes a lot of effort to go. And I have patients or high level athletes or people waiting for me, the police mm-hmm. department, and that's when I have to draw.
Don't
want to
make
that.
Them mad.
No, in the moment, and you really want to do those things. You want to go to work. You want to make money. You want to mm-hmm. do that. But that when you're really tired and you just wake up, it's everybody, as far as I know, struggles with that. Those are the two keys when it comes to it depends on the type of crime people are committing. But again, when I was in that treatment, correctional facility, that was the absolute key for, of course, there's some guys that are what we call psychopathic, and those guys are actually really low in negative emotions. They just don't feel fear, right? And these guys, the reason they're like that, they're like that mostly from birth, but then punishment at school, like by teachers and your parents, it doesn't scare them. So they don't really learn a lot of the lessons that most people learn. But again, the percentage of people in the prison population that are psychopathic isn't all that high. I'll be honest, I don't remember the stats. It's maybe 10 or 15%, but I could be wrong. So the majority of people...
And those wouldn't be guys. Those wouldn't be guys that would be in a program like you were teaching anyway, right? I mean...
That's right. We actually would look for that and try and rule those people out because they don't tend to benefit. They tend to use that information, whatever they learn, to actually manipulate others. And so that's usually something we unfortunately, at this point, there's no good treatment for that.
Let me just stop you right there, and I'm curious what the role of empathy would be in all of that. We talk a lot about empathy here on the podcast. How does that play into the things you're talking about?
So when it comes to psychopaths, like we call it psychopathy, they used to call some people call it sociopaths.
But there's no empathy there, right? I mean that's
right. Those individuals tend to have very low empathy and low negative emotions. Those are really some of the hallmarks of what's like the deepest trait level. What's going on there? Then they're probably not people like that are probably not listening to your show. I can almost guarantee it. But of course, often, I'll be honest, I think it's a bit sometimes incorrect that a lot of people in the correctional systems don't have a lot of empathy. I really think that a lot of the guys and gals do, but they have these other issues from a more personality level, like I said, high levels of negative emotions and, a difficult time with motivation or conscientiousness. And you put those together and you're the type of person that's going to make lots of impulsive decisions, but you're not doing it because you're not empathic.
Right.
You don't care about anyone.
I found the same thing with friends of mine. And I totally agree with that. But empathy, in your opinion, is it something, is it something that I ask a lot of guys that come on the show this, is it something you're born with or is it something you have to practice? I mean, is it something you need to work with? And if you need to work with it, it's okay, right? I mean, you can work with it, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, all these things are on a continuum. In other words, just like these personality traits, we all fall somewhere along this continuum. One of the other, I'm glad you bring this all up. It just fits in perfectly with what I'm with my book and what I'm saying. The other major personality trait, remember there's five, so
right.
This is the third one I'm bringing up now, is called agreeableness. And just a long story short, agreeableness is it's basically has to do with our attitude towards others. So there's a sub trait of agreeableness called empathy, and that is part of a more global series of traits. And I'll just give you I'll give you an example. So people are really high on agreeableness. They tend to be very trusting. They tend to be, really open with their feelings and thoughts. They're straightforward. In other words, they wear their emotions on their sleeves, sort of thing. They are highly empathic and they're concerned about helping others. They're more into cooperation versus competition. They are really lenient towards others' shortcomings. They tend to defer to others. They're modest and they're really sympathetic. And easily moved by others who are less fortunate. Whereas the opposite is having low agreeableness. And again, these are the extremes. So most of us fall near the middle. But the opposite on the low side, some people call it disagreeableness, the personality trait. These people tend to be more skeptical. They're not easily duped. They're more guarded with what they share with others. They're more focused on their own problems and goals than focusing on helping others. They're more self-protective, they're more competitive, they are pretty vocal often about what they disagree with, they're pretty proud and not afraid to let others know it, they're tough-minded, they're objective. And again, most of us fall near the middle, but again, we all fall somewhere along these continuums, and it doesn't mean you're going to have all the traits I listed, but those are the traits that research shows tend to go together. So empathy is really correlated with high agreeableness. And so can you learn it? Are you born with it? These personality traits are what we call 50% heritable. And that means that you've inherited it in the form of genes. It's not like there's one gene that's your agreeableness gene. We can't figure that out at this point. But we know with twin studies who've been taken apart at birth, and you know, there's lots and lots of huge history of research on this. They found about 50% of your personality trait, let's say of agreeableness and empathy, for example, is due to your genes. The other 50% is due to your experiences in life. Many of the experiences happen early in life, and the older you get, the harder it is to change these core personality traits. But the good news is, when you get in touch with your values, so when you figure out what's really, really important to you, and this, I write this in my book, and I've wrote an article for Success Magazine and different things like that. You know, one of the biggest differentiators between people who are successful and not successful is people who are successful basically figure out what's important to them, what their values are and their goals are. And they live their life based on that, not based on their immediate urges, feelings, moods, energy levels. So, for example, you know, getting yourself to get up and go to the gym at 6 in the morning, let's just say, that's nobody really wants to do that at 6 in the morning. Mm-hmm. But people, you know, really high-achieving athletes do this all the time because they don't listen to their moods, their emotions, their immediate gut reactions and emotions. They have a bigger picture in their mind. They say, you know, I value, or my goal is to make the Olympic team, or is to do this or that, and I'm going to go through anything to get there. I don't give a crap about how I feel this morning. I'm tired, but that's just the way it is. I make my decisions based on what's important to me, not on my feelings, my urges, my moods, my energy levels, and my circumstances either. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense how I'll explain it? So if you get in touch with your values, can basically, you can actually think, you know what, I may be disagreeable, my personality may be somewhat disagreeable, so I'm not naturally really empathic, but, you know, I now have a family, and I really love my kids, and I have a wife or a girlfriend or a husband or whatever, and, you know, that's one of my values. They're so important to me. This is part of my values, is to be a good dad, a good husband, a good wife, whatever it may be, mother. And so those are my values. And so therefore, if I'm really in touch with that and remind myself on a daily basis what my values are, I can overcome, to some extent, my natural inclination to not be that empathic. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I'll be motivated to work on it. Because like you said, empathy is a skill as well. So, you know, just when you listen to someone, you know, just reminding yourself, I want to listen to what this person's saying, and I try to bounce it back to them, like what I'm hearing them say. Right there, that's one way to be empathic. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're actually trying to understand someone from their perspective. That's really the definition
of empathy. Walking in their shoes. Excellent.
Yeah.
This is a great conversation, Chris. I wish we could continue. We're out of time. We only got to three of the five traits, personality traits you wanted to talk about. But I guess if you want the rest of them, folks, you're going to have to get the book. Yeah, Chris, how do we get that book?
You know, it hasn't been published yet. It's at the last stages. I'm self-publishing it. If you go to friesenperformance.com, I'm also on Twitter at Friesen Perform, that's my handle on Twitter. I'll be honest, I'm actually going to be giving the book away for free for the first, 48 hours when I release it on Amazon. So it's going to start off as a Kindle book, probably in about 5 to 6 weeks. So maybe when this airs, it'll be out.
Cool.
So if your listeners are interested, if you join in, there'll be a mailing list, and I'll start to put that on my website, and I'll put that on my Twitter. I have a Facebook page and a LinkedIn account. All these things have my Friesen Performance company, or whatever you want to call it. And I will be giving away the Kindle version for about, 48 hours when it's released. So what you guys have to do is you simply go to my webpage, and there'll be something there where you're going to click on to get my book for free or get updates on my book. It's called Achieve. And once you click that, you'll go into this, you'll get an automatic email. And once it's released for free, you will get, it'll send you an email in the days up, you know, coming before that. And the only thing I ask in return is if you get it for free, you know, and you do read it, it would be great if you could leave a review, because reviews are really important.
There you go.
Okay. You know, for a book to be successful, and I hope it helps people out.
Okay, Dr. Christopher Friesen, and his soon to be released book, Find Out Who You Are, What You Really Want, and How to Make It Happen. And I think I'm not saying the whole title there, am I? I'm missing a piece of it.
Yeah, that's the subtitle. Okay. It's the first part, just called Achieve. And then that's Achieve. What you read was perfect. That's the subtitle. That really describes what the book is doing.
Excellent. Excellent. Dr. Chris Friesen, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
It's been great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Sure would like to know how you're doing. You can always catch me at MathersRodney@yahoo.com, MathersRodney@yahoo.com. And I want to thank my special guest today, Dr. Chris Friesen. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.